I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, most rural counties in Texas regularly vote 80% or more for the Republican Party. This voting bloc overwhelms the big cities of Texas who tend to vote for Democrats. The math works to keep Texas red, and this math applies pretty much across the country. So then why are rural areas so loyal to Republicans? This wasn't always the case. It's a recent development in politics. And this divide has grown beyond politics into a general animosity. The polarization between rural and urban America has grown into a vast chasm with frightening consequences for maintaining a united United States. Is there a way to heal the rural-urban divide? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Need to get rid of your property? Here's a simple solution. Donate it to TPR. Visit tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation to learn more.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Frequently, when we talk about U.S. politics, we get caught up in the red versus blue or Republican versus Democrat, but maybe we should be talking about rural versus urban, the big cities versus the big country, because there is a rapidly growing divide between rural and urban communities. And the rural areas, they're winning. They have a lock on political power right now in America. It's the base for MAGA, and it is very loyal to the Republican Party. So how did this vast divide happen? Where is it going? We're joined by Tevra Brown, co-author of the groundbreaking new book, Rural versus Urban, The Growing Divide That Threatens Democracy. Trevor, along with his co-author, Suzanne Metzler, brings fresh data-driven insight into how this economic upheaval, political neglect, rising resentments, how they've transformed what was once a united electorate into two very distinctly hostile camps. And Trevor, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me, David.
Right now in the United States, we look at some of the major big cities, Portland, Chicago, Charlotte now, New York. We see the Trump administration sending troops to these cities. How does that relate to this discussion of urban versus rural?
Yeah, it's an important and pressing question. And what we would say is it's largely symptomatic of this growing rural-urban divide that you described at the top of the show. So a lot of people might think that rural areas and urban areas have always sort of voted in the ways they have. Since the New Deal, we have pretty good evidence that urban areas have been the party of or have been voting for Democratic presidential candidates and congressional candidates. However, rural areas, at least up until the 1990s, also tended to vote sort of in lockstep with urban areas. They tended to, if not every election, support Democrats. Starting in the 1990s, though, with the onset of what we describe as place-based inequality, economy in rural areas really dropped out. Rural dwellers, particularly non-Hispanic white rural dwellers, shifted to the Republican Party. In the sort of second phase we document, rural areas, rural people began to feel like they were sort of left behind or unheard by Democratic officials, and they grew increasingly partisan. And in the third phase we document from 2008 to 2020, we note that just conservative organizations have played an important role in locking down rural areas for Republicans. So yes, you know, the president's recent rhetoric on cities reflects an important chasm in American life, but, you know, this divide has been growing more than two decades now, and so we would say it's symptomatic of these broader political, economic, and organizational issues.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What have you seen, what have you noticed about the growing divide between rural versus urban? Are you a rural person? Do you consider yourself to be a country boy, country girl? What are your thoughts about this talk about the politics of place, and why does it matter? How does it impact national politics? But Trevor, I'm going to get back to what I was asking about with the sending of National Guard troops to these urban areas, Chicago, Portland, New York, wherever. It sounds like, you know, the rural areas have been told a story about how terrible these cities are, that they're falling apart, they're war zones. We can't let this happen. And so they say, okay, we'll do something about it. And then Trump will send in these troops. And then, you know, having the troops there, they themselves create that reality. But before that, wasn't really true. So is sending these troops to these areas, these cities, is this something that is satisfactory to people who live in rural areas?
It's a great question. We don't have good survey or ethnographic sort of research on how rural people actually feel about sending troops to urban areas. But what I can sort of confidently say is that the Republican Party has, over the course of several decades, told a story about urban areas that is composed of a couple elements. One, that it's sort of that these urban areas are sort of crime ridden, that they are sort of failed cities. And second, this tends to overlap with racial politics. You know, we have a lot of good evidence that cities tend to be sort of raced as African American, racialized. And this can tap into what we find in the book is a small but sort of important divide on anti-Black racism between non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic urbanites. Now, racism doesn't tell the entire story, but it's certainly part of it.
The counter that when they say these are war zones, these areas, these cities, there's blight, they're filled with welfare queens and all that. But looking at the numbers, you could say the cities are the economic engine of the country. This is where the jobs are created. This is where wealth is generated. The cities are what really pays the taxes in the country. This is where the wealth comes from. That story doesn't get told.
This is true. In fact, you know, the sort of like first part of our book details the growing economic divide between rural and urban areas. So rural areas historically have always sort of, quote unquote, lagged behind urban areas in terms of economic development, particularly after the onset of the Industrial Revolution, the sort of like movement of a lot of people to cities. We argue that this sort of economic divide, particularly starting in the 1990s, does create a sense of on-the-ground resentment among rural dwellers. They see factories that had migrated to their places of residence. I'm from a rural place in Ohio that relied on a lot of factory jobs. Those factory jobs are now gone. A lot of communities relied on extractive industries. Those jobs have largely dissipated, and that itself creates a sort of resentment among rural dwellers, especially given that the Democratic Party is now associated with very wealthy, sort of quote unquote knowledge economy cities. So I do think that economics, play a role, and that's how we think it relates.
Well, the story of rural versus urban in politics, it is just filled with paradoxes and contradictions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a feeling of emotional truth here that it's just belies what the reality on the ground is. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. We're going to go to Henry when we come back. He's on the board, ready to go on the air with his call. And you can call in with your questions and comments, observations about rural versus urban, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues after a quick break. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. If you look at the voting returns for general elections here in Texas, you see that in rural counties, they tend to vote 80% plus Republican. The big cities, as you know, where the millions and millions of people are, they vote generally under 60% Democrat. But when you weigh it out for statewide elections, all the rural counties will overwhelm the cities, and we end up with the red state that we are today. This gap, this chasm, is growing between rural versus urban voters, and why is that? How did this come about? It is wrong to assume that this is just a feature of American politics. This has not always been the way. We're going to talk about that and get into some of the details. What are the paradoxes and the contradictions of the situation? You can call in with your observations and questions and comments. I'd love to hear them, especially if you're out in the country, out in El Monte. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Henry. And Henry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, David. I can sort of relate, even though I'm a born and bred city boy, never lived in anything but a metropolitan area, but, you know, a lot of San Antonians feel that way about Austin. It's a great place, but it's overdone its popularity, and I don't want to drive there. But as far as the divide goes, I'm thinking, first of all, I don't know anybody that lives in the country. Okay, I'd love to live in the country, but if we got to know somebody in their point of view, that would help. But it's like, you know, they're closing hospitals in the country, in the small towns, and that's not good for anybody, okay? Because they come to the cities for medical care in an emergency. And plus, this school voucher thing. I don't know a lot of Democrats that are for that. And I know a lot of people in the country, their legislators fought like hell against that. Because you're going to take away the largest employer in some of those towns, the school district. And you wouldn't get a charter school in a lot of small towns. So it's all a downside and nothing of the upside.
All right, Henry, thank you for your call and your observation. We appreciate that. Trevor Brown, he's the co-author of the book Rural versus Urban, The Growing Divide That Threatens Democracy. So what do you think about the observations that we had from Henry?
I was actually unable to hear Henry's observations.
Okay, we'll fix that on the board. But he was talking about how the country folks, they're losing health care. They're losing their rural hospitals in Texas. Texas is losing a lot of rural hospitals. And this is a crisis for many folks there. Also, we have an issue here with vouchers for private schools, how that was rammed through and how that's going to hurt the rural areas. But that was rammed through by our Republican Party of Texas. It comes down to, I think there's really the nut of the whole thing is that when we don't see a lot of service to the Republican rural voters by the Republican Party, and you can't help but wonder if they're voting against their own interest at times by being so loyal, providing such an enormous voting block for Republicans.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I'm sorry again, I couldn't hear the.
We're working
the
caller, on that.
But thanks for the question, Henry. Yeah, so Henry's really put his thumb on one of the paradoxes in American politics and political science, which is there's actually, you know, you might sort of think that there's a clear relationship between what elected officials do and then how voters respond. And there's just, you know, not a lot of good evidence for that. We know that, so a lot of rural people in Texas are now staunchly Republican for some of the reasons I described earlier. So they're likely to process information in a way, in a sort of motivated reasoning way that allows or that encourages them to filter it through a partisan lens. So, you know, you might see a rural hospital closure and think, well, that's Obamacare. This reflects a lot of good research. So Michael Shepard has a paper, political scientist at the University of Michigan, showing that not just in Texas, but around the country, we're seeing a rash of rural hospital closures. A lot of those hospital closings are happening in states where they refuse to expand Medicaid under the ACA. What happens when those hospitals close? A lot of voters actually turn to the Republican Party. Why do they turn to the Republican Party? Democrats have been the party that have owned the issue of healthcare. Now, you might wonder, how do we get, or how does a party more effectively organize to get voters to connect with the policies that it advances? I think it's safe to say that the Democratic Party has been more receptive to advancing healthcare to people in rural areas. We argue in the book that the Democratic Party needs to invest in local party organizing as a way to connect the dots between these sort of inconsistencies between the policy agenda that the Republican Party advances, which is certainly inconsistent with the material stakes of rural voters' lives, and how they might actually vote at the ballot box. So there's definitely an inconsistency there. But in order for the Democratic Party to be competitive in rural places again, they need to invest in party organizing.
Let's go to Steve on the phone. Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good conversation. Hey, I had a quick observation. You know, the guy in the book wrote the book right off, started talking about how I'm rural. Rural people are racist, that was the big thing. And it's like, you guys don't understand what rural voters saw. You saw massive illegal immigration flooding our cities, our schools, our hospitals. You don't mention any of that as being a reason. You don't mention anything about men and women sports, transgenderism, which is completely a Democrat concept. You don't mention that. You don't mention anything that they did teaching critical race theory and these radical policies in our schools. If you looked at some of the reasons that people voted Republican, instead of digging deep and trying to find little pockets of racism, you might come up with something. The Democrat Party doesn't need new offices in rural areas and new groups. They need new ideas that mesh with reality.
All right, Steve, thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. Well, Trevor Brown, were you able to hear Steve?
I was able to hear Steve. Thanks for the insights, Steve. Interesting to hear those ideas. So I would just say, one, we do not argue that racism explains all of the rural-urban divide. I think it explains some of it. We do have evidence that suggests that rural non-Hispanic white people have slightly higher scores of anti-Black racism, and those tend to push people to vote for the Republican Party. I would note, second, that we find that those attitudes only become active after rural areas become decimated by changes in the economy. So changes in the rural economy, jobs begin to disappear, sense of economic dislocation, status loss, factories are gone, et cetera, on down the list. Rural areas have been hurting. We hear that economically. to the point about cultural issues, you know, we actually did an exhaustive analysis of public opinion on issues like gay marriage, funding for the police, other LGBTQ rights, abortion policy. We actually found that, you know, a lot of people assume that the rural urban divide is about, as Steve put it, ideas or culture war issues. We actually find that that's really not the case. Now, of course, you can look into any rural area and find someone who holds ideas about these issues. We respect their opinions, but they're just not all that different from how urban people see these issues. So they can't explain the big rural-urban gulf that is now sort of engulfing the country. But thanks for the call, Steve.
So Steve talked about the reality that the Democrats need to respond to the reality of things. He mentioned mass immigration flooding the cities. You know, that didn't really happen. You talked about men in women's sports. That's so rare. I've never actually have seen that or had any kind of experience connected to that. Critical race theory and radical theories being taught in our schools. Yeah, that's not really a thing. It doesn't really happen. So it does seem like, though, people who are living in the rural areas, they're hearing these things as problems. These are not real problems. As a matter of fact, migration or illegal immigration, whatever you want to call it, these people were going into the rural areas, and they were propping up the rural areas because many of these counties were suffering depopulation or extremely aging out populations, and they were managing and maintaining farms and ranches. So, Steve, I mean, are these the real problems, or is this a messaging issue? I mean, Trevor.
Yeah, so this is a good question. I tend to agree that that Republican elites have done a very good job of jumping on these issues. What we have found, again, exhaustively, so we interviewed several political local leaders in several states across the country for the book. And these issues, even when we asked about them, just did not come up as salient issues in people's lives for rural people. What came up again and again and again is that rural people do feel that their community has lost out economically, that Democrats, have foisted policies on them without their consent. Again, as I mentioned, there's not a ton of disagreement on public policy as far as we can tell between rural and urban voters. What we do find is that rural areas often feel like they're left out of decision-making processes.
But just the opposite is true, because the rural areas control Congress. They control Senate. They, put, Donald Trump in the White House. That is this MAGA base.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think that both things can be true. It can be the case that, rural voters who make up, they only make up 20% of the electorate, so they're not in any ways sort of dominating politics. The argument we make is that there's a small but important electoral advantage that is given to the party that dominates rural areas. Historically, we haven't had a political party dominate rural areas. Currently, it's the Republican Party. I do think, and our findings show that there is a disconnect between what elite Republicans say are the priorities of their base and what their base on the ground actually cares about.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're going to continue talking about the gap, the political divide between rural and urban America. It's no longer a metaphor. It is becoming a crisis with consequences that are frightening. So we're going to see, where is this schism going? Where is it taking America? And we're going to hear from our callers. We've got several here. We've got Frank, Donnie, and Robert. We'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. And if you want to call in, the number is 833-877-8255. Having a conversation with Trevor Brown. He's the co-author of the new book, Rural versus Urban, The Growing Divide That Threatens Democracy. He co-authored it with Suzanne Mettler. And we'll be right back after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Trevor Brown is with us. He is the co-author of the book, The Growing Divide, Rural versus Urban, The Growing Divide That Threatens Democracy. Let's get back to the phones, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Donnie. And Donnie, you're on the air.
Okay, yes. Good afternoon. Well, I'm just going to see if I can quickly share this personal experience. In the 90s, I was a very young man, mostly concerned, you know, changing diapers and, you know, paying a few bills. But I'm from that background, and my folks and many in the area, ranching background. Okay, since World War II, you know, there was a wool and mohair incentive, you know, sheep and goats. And, of course, I remember in the 90s, that got taken away. And basically, I was very disappointed. I was just a hand. You know, I didn't know nothing. Didn't get to work sheep no more. People quit because they lost the government payment. And there's a good many who got a little, you know, feel a little bit, I think, too much entitled to it. You know, but anyway, everybody believes in a safety net, but there's, you know, there's times it turns into a gold mine. Anyway, you know, there's some other things. Like I say, I was young. There's stuff spoken about taxes and ad valorem and on properties and estate, death, whatever. And I'm not even sure if all that stuff was correct. You know, there's that taxes was talk. You know, that's kind of a boogeyman. Anyway, okay, so that's kind of my short spiel on that.
All right. Well, Donnie,
okay,
thanks.
There's one more thing. Could I add one more
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
Back in about 2012, my home county, right smack dab in the heart of Texas, basically about 9,000 people lived there, 2012 election. Well, you know, of course, we know who was in office 2012 going for re-election. Anyway, everybody liked the county judge. He's a Democrat, been there for 12 years. Anyway, a day or two after the election, they said, well, where'd the county judge go? And thought, well, people, y'all got on that machine and you hit that button that said straight ticket Republican. So you kicked out your county judge that everybody liked. Anyway, you know, people might have had a long face for maybe about 3 hours and then they pretty well let it roll off their shoulder. But anyway, thanks for your time.
All right. Well, thank you, Donnie. We no longer have a straight ticket voting in Texas, so that's no longer an issue. Trevor Brown, we heard a little bit about the economic resentment from Donnie there.
Yeah, so thanks for the call, Donnie, and thanks for sharing your personal story. Yeah, I mean, we've seen this happen in rural economies across the country where the agricultural industry, which used to be a really important part of rural America and still is, underwent loads and loads of deregulation. Some of that happened when Democrats were in office, and they sort of owned the blame for that. More generally, farming in general has become a smaller source of employment in rural America, in part because of consolidation. So we do definitely think that sort of the underlying secular economic changes that are happening in rural areas sort of generate a sort of resentment. This is consistent with my upbringing in rural Ohio, where we were dependent on factory jobs. Donnie also sort of mentioned an irony again in all of this, which is that rural areas, in fact, disproportionately rely on social safety net issues, social safety net programs, including things like Medicaid, SNAP, and so on and so forth. And I think one concern I have, and concerns that other people have about the day-to-day lives of rural people, is that the big, beautiful bill that was recently passed includes major tax cuts to, or I'm sorry, includes major cuts to Medicaid health insurance, and it's going to disproportionately harm rural areas. You can bet the farm on that. And similar concerns with cuts to food stamps and other safety net issues.
Well, a lot of people in the rural areas have bet the farm on voting Republican, and we'll see how that goes. But as you say, rural Americans use SNAP at a higher rate than urban Americas. There are higher poverty rates in rural areas. So school lunch programs and breakfast programs are going to be cut back as there are cuts to the USDA rural development programs. The farm bill is one of the largest federal spending bills. It directs hundreds of billions of dollars towards rural America, but that goes mainly towards corporate farms, doesn't end up in the hands of the people in the rural areas generally. And so it does, though, support farm income, guarantees crop insurance, funds rural development grants, keeps agriculture viable even in unprofitable years. So there's a lot of government spending that goes into rural areas, but I don't think it's getting into helping enough rural people. Is that a problem?
Sure. So one part of Donnie's call that's really important is the sort of like distinction between safety net programs and jobs. And what we have found in our field research and what other researchers have found is that rural people, and frankly urban people too, would much rather have a decent paying job than they would a check from the government.
I've been told nothing stops a bullet like a good job. It's also something that, deals with, violence.
Yes, exactly. So if there's any theory out there that suggests that sort of just dumping more money into rural areas in terms of safety net programs is going to help Democrats is a little suspect. It can help improve the lives of rural voters, but again, the important distinction I would make is that a job gives people sort of standing. It gives people social status in the United States. In particular, social status is often tied to employment. So that's certainly an important part of the equation. But the key thing we come down on is that no matter what sort of policies Democrats or Republicans sort of advance, unless there are people on the ground telling them about what these policies are actually doing, people who they can trust, organizations, it's not clear that there's always going to be a relationship between how voters or between what elected officials do and how voters respond. Politics is simply much more messy than that.
Okay, let's go to caller Frank. And Frank, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I know it's kind of taboo to talk about, but it seems like there's a perception that the organized criminal element has got more control through their organizations of the bureaucracies in the large cities. I think a lot of people are afraid of that. Can you talk about that?
All right. So crime in the large cities, is that something that becomes a factor people consider? We know that there's a lot of opioid use and drug use in the rural areas as well. But Trevor, what about crime?
Yeah, I mean, crime is an issue that affects people's day-to-day lives. I live in Baltimore, an area that has that struggles with crime. It's unclear to us, and we don't find a lot of evidence that actual crime rates are correlated with rural-urban division. A lot of crime also happens in my rural home county in Ohio. You mentioned opioid overdoses. Those are a major problem in rural areas, we know statistically. So I think the real sort of way this sort of relates to the rural-urban divide is, you know, both areas are hurting in terms of what we might consider crimes, including drug use and drug overdose. Cities often get sort of painted as particularly crime-ridden, even if the crime rate's going down in cities. I think that's largely a story told by political elites that doesn't have a lot of empirical traction.
So how is it they think that the Democratic Party is the party of political elites when you have Donald Trump as the head of the Republican Party and Steve Bannon doesn't strike me as a country boy and some of these other people? How do these labels come to be?
It's great. It's a great question. And the first thing I'd say is, one, the rural-urban divide starts well before Trump. I would say Trump is symptomatic of the rural-urban divide. I think what Trump has been able to channel among rural voters, and we don't have a lot of evidence that rural voters are any more Trumpian, however you want to measure that, than other voters, is he does speak to a sort of frustration about the way that certain segments of society have been sort of locked out of decision-making processes. To back up a little bit here, how do rural voters get from, you know, get to the point that of associating the Democratic Party with the party of elites? Well, we know that increasingly Democrats are made up of, the Democratic Party is made up of people with higher levels of education. That hasn't always been true. Historically, people with lower levels of education have voted for the Democratic Party. Right. Increasingly, Democrats win their votes in cities, and those cities are largely, they're not entirely made up of people with college degrees, people, right, people like me.
And so we're seeing a lot of people who are now suspicious of folks who have them, who are over-edumacated. All right, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back. We'll get Robert on the air. Our number is 833-877-8255. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the urban versus rural divide. We see that in rural areas, they don't outnumber the people in the big cities in Texas, but because they vote in such basically uniformly for the Republican Party, they're able to basically keep Texas red. But what are they getting for those votes? Is there an actual policy, policies coming from the Republican Party to reward them for that voting, or is there actually, you know, is it hurting them? Are they voting against their own interest? But what's happening with this divide? Where is it leading America? Is this a threat to democracy? Trevor Brown is with us. He's the co-author of the new book, Rural versus Urban. Let's go to Robert. And Robert, you're on the air.
That voting. Hello. Actually,
yes, sir. Turn down your radio.
Oh, yes. Look, I think you fellows are not realizing that cities have become the centers for crime, centers for demonstrations, centers for illegal aliens, and centers for these phony protests that come up and are shown on the media. I mean, and I think there's another thing between rural and city, as cities are mostly run by, as it's mostly people who adhere to the Catholic Church in cities, and in rural communities, they're Protestant. Now, the Catholic Church in America has gotten $5 million from the Congress to welcome illegal aliens in the country.
All right. Thank you very much, Robert. Appreciate the disinformation you're spreading there. So, Trevor Brown, what about religion? How does religion enter into this? You go to a rural area in Texas, the first thing he asks you is what church you go to?
This is a fantastic question. As I mentioned, you know, our argument about what caused and what solidified the rural-urban divide has sort of three prongs. One has to do with economic dislocation. The second has to do with sort of resentment among the elites. And a third is that, frankly, conservatives are much more organized than Democrats currently are, at least as far as we can tell, in rural America. And part of that organization actually comes through white evangelical churches. So we collected national data on white evangelical churches, and we find that on a population per capita basis, they outnumber urban areas 3-1 in rural areas. And, you know, we run some analyses and find that, you know, the mobilization of conservative churches in rural areas tends to be associated with Republican county vote share. So religion certainly matters here. And we would point to the mobilization of the religious right and evangelical churches. On the flip side of that, you might ask, well, where have the organizations that used to support Democrats gone? Well, in the book, we show that, you know, a lot of people tend to think of unions as urban sort of based organizations. We have a lot of evidence of that. We actually turn up new evidence that shows that, in part because a lot of manufacturing and coal jobs were in rural areas, union decline has happened quite significantly in rural areas as well. And those used to be organizations that would maybe encourage folks to vote for Democrats or encourage people to split ticket votes. So there's a real organizational asymmetry right now between Republicans and Democrats and on the rural urban side. And the white evangelical churches are a major part of that.
So we've seen the rural vote so strong for the Republican Party, and they're able to keep the Republican Party. And with the structure, the way politics or the government is structured in the United States, it favors low population areas, you know, with the Electoral College, with the way the Senate is set up and the way the Senate is set up favoring low population areas, it has put in the Supreme Court. So there's a lot of structure there that supports, you know, the rural areas. So why is that a problem? How is this a threat to democracy?
So our concern is that the contemporary Republican Party is frankly one that is organized around principles that are anti-small-d democracy. The party is full of elected officials who have denied election results, who have simply decided that the rule of law should not contain them. The contemporary president is clearly trying to consolidate power right now in a way that is pretty visible, sort of putting pressure on media organizations, putting pressure on universities. Our concern is that the combination of a really radicalized Republican Party, and you put that in combination with the way that several institutions favor rural areas, you put those in combinations, and the Republican Party is able to win very close elections and hold power in all three chambers without necessarily representing the majority of the country. So if you look at just the Senate, the last more than 10 times the Republican Party has held the Senate, they actually have not represented a majority of the country. So we think, now, one caveat.
Of the population of the country.
Yeah.
They represent the majority of the states, which, you know, that's depending on your view, where does the power reside? Does it reside in the states or in the people?
Sure. But we trace this across several institutions. Republicans are systematically advantaged given the rural urban divide in House votes. So you think about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a lot of her votes that go to her are actually wasted. They could and should, in a different way of organized elections, go to Democrats that are fighting more marginal votes.
Because her district is packed.
Her district is packed, exactly.
Packed and cracked districts. We see cities like Nashville that is divided up mm-hmm. in lots of ways, so that your population ends up being diluted in supporting the rural voters.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the Senate, the House, the Electoral College gives rural areas a boon. One thing I will note, though, is, and it's, again, a little bit of an irony, all the survey data we've looked at, we've found that, you know, rural dwellers have swung to the Republican Party. But, you know, there's really good sort of survey analysis on this. And you can sort of test how authoritarian someone is in outlook. And we haven't found a lot of evidence that rural dwellers are any more or less authoritarian than voters in urban areas, Republicans in urban areas, Democrats in urban areas. So the upshot is, you know, you've combined a consolidation of the rural vote with an extremist party. And until you sort of unknot that, democracy is in peril.
So are there any opportunities for the Democratic Party to make an appeal to rural voters if they're able to just get 10-15% of rural voters that they don't have now? That would completely upset the calculus that we have now in political power in America.
Yes. And, you know, a lot of this conversation, and this is partially my fault, is, you know, we've sort of been talking about rural voters as if they're, you know, sort of a heterogeneous block of or a homogenous block of Republicans. In fact, 30% of rural dwellers still identify as Democrats. So one, there are people to mobilize there. I think the gubernatorial race in Virginia, where rural counties swung very, very left to Democrats, demonstrates that there are potentials in rural America, and we shouldn't just sort of, a lot of people in the Democratic Party I've been involved in conversations with behind closed doors have sort of argued we should just write rural places off. Totally disagree with that. There are a lot of opportunities there. One, because rural counties are, you know, again, rural areas have Democrats within them. But then second, you know, we argue that, you know, historically we know that Democrats can compete in rural areas. How should we do that? We argue that they need to be on the ground through party building as a way to connect all of these sorts of messy policy issues more clearly with voters. I think, you know, a real opportunity could, unfortunately, I don't want to paint it as an opportunity because it's going to cause a lot of pain. The upcoming cuts to Medicaid are going to be a huge problem in rural areas. Democrats need to be on the ground messaging to rural voters where those cuts came from, or otherwise it's unclear to me that things will change.
Where are rural voters getting their information from?
It's a great question. You know, I wish we had data on sort of talk radio show. I know that, you know, growing up, I received a lot of my information from talk radio. There's some evidence that Republicans increasingly are getting their information from Fox News. Unfortunately, we just don't have access to the data to know if that's particularly a salient part of rural life.
So these are like typically news deserts. Their local newspapers are closing down. Their local public radio stations in rural areas are having a tough time due to the cuts for the rescinding for the money from the federal government. They need access to information to find out what's really happening. How does public policy impact their lives so that they can demand more for their vote? Trevor Brown, Rural versus Urban, the Growing Divide that Threatens Democracy. Thank you so much. Appreciate you talking to us today.
Thanks. Thanks, David, for having me. And thanks to the callers for calling in.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.